This is Monocle on Design, a show where we discuss everything from architecture and craft to furniture and fashion. I'm Nick Manise. On today's program, we meet the interior architect and furniture designer, Marion Storer. We also hear from the team at Spaken & X, who share insights on their collaborative process. And the Good Plastic Company explains why its namesake and much maligned material might not be that bad. All that coming up on Monocle on Design. Since 2011, Marion Storer has been running her namesake design studio, working on projects that span from luxury yachts to bespoke residential interiors. It's work that has prompted the designer to give attention to the development of her very own furniture collection. I caught up with Marion in Paris earlier this year, where we discussed how she has moved from one discipline to another and the importance of being able to see human touch in design.
My love for craftsmanship has brought me to light up the way the furniture would be mounted and to show the artisan behind it.
Maybe a starting point is to go back to those custom pieces you would design for your clients. How do you go from, I guess, designing a piece for one house, for one person, to then designing a collection of 16 items or pieces of furniture that are then going to be used by the masses? How do you take it from one person to, I guess, everyone?
Designing it to a client, you get to know the person very well. So you design it for the soul of the place. It's pretty smooth in shape, in color. Designing it publicly makes it, in a way, more introvert. You don't show as much as you wish.
You talked there about, I guess, being a little bit introverted, but let's wander over here and have a look at this chair. This doesn't feel introverted to me at all. There's like a playful little foot down here. Can you tell us a little bit about this design and how, like, it is, I guess, made to be accessible and something that more people might want in their home rather than a bespoke custom piece?
Of course, this piece is called Soulful because it's inviting for a welcoming feel. We have like wooden carved arm rest dropping in a little feet. So it's like a little animal. It's made of solid oak. And we have a kind of ancestral technique that merged the two oak solid pieces. And then this everything is carved in a gouge detail.
It's really quite an experience to touch it. It's very tactile, very, like, you kind of want to run your hands over it.
I really love the raw material itself. I don't want to add anything to the raw material. The fabric also is hand-waved by Towin. The seam lines are curved to reflect the curve of the sofa. So it's really a piece of work that we've been doing with Atelier Jouffre. And yes, it's a beautiful feel to sit on it.
Why raw materials? I mean, this is a theme that kind of runs through this whole collection. Why, I guess, have things finished without, you know, a surface protection or anything like that if this is indeed going to be in people's homes?
Because I don't think we need to add anything to the raw material to make it more beautiful. It's beautiful itself.
Again, this is a collection that's going out to the public. Are you hoping that maybe this starts to shift the way that we see our homes and, you know, the need to kind of protect everything or, you know, clad it in plastic or a lacquer?
I think it has started already for a few years now. And the more it goes, the more we're going back to the ancestral craftsmanship and to the material itself. We don't want anything fake and that don't last. We want the pieces that will last and we can see in different angles every day.
In terms of finishes here, actually maybe we'll wander over to the desk. This has been assembled without any screws or, you know, we described it talking before as a sort of a medieval design. Does that also come into it, this, I guess, desire to return to simplicity?
Yes, because these lines are very straight, a little bit like the brutalist period, medieval maybe not, but it's all about the assemblage and the beauty of the solid oak between. We can see some queue d'aronde going on the side of the drawers, and I love color as well. It's a big part of my work. The idea here is to find the specific color for pieces and to develop it so that we see the solid oak be through it. It's not covering the material itself.
I think you were talking about the joints here. You can see how this piece has been slotted together. Mm-hmm. You've also painted it in a way that you can see that it is actual
wood, that there is a colour and a grain beneath it. What do you hope this makes people feel or think when they see these joints, when they see the paint like this?
Because I want to be true with the way I design pieces and not hide anything. It's what we said before, an introvert work. What I wish for is for people to view it and live with it and love it the more they experience living with those pieces, because the beauty doesn't really show at first, but by using it little by little.
For other furniture designers that are listening, is there a broader benefit to manufacturing and making in this way and in taking a little bit of time and really putting some effort into quality materials and complex finishes? Is there a benefit to that, to your work?
Yes, it's a slow process, but it's also making all the artisanat d'art people work on it. This is the beauty of having a piece made not in 2 weeks, but in 3-6 months, because then we really understand the complexity of craftsmanship behind it.
We're in a world where we're trying to simplify things too much. It's funny, there is a complexity, but there is also a simplicity to this. And maybe I think making things simply is often actually quite difficult to do.
Yes, and making things last also. You wouldn't want to change it or replace it. It's part of your home.
So much of the technology in this furniture, if we can call it that, there's a dowel holding this shelf together, which is also, I guess, celebrated in the design. Like that becomes a feature in itself, the actual construction of it. Why do you think we've moved away from this as a society? Are we just lazy, or did we start to think that maybe there wasn't a beauty in seeing this simple complexity?
No, I think people sometimes want everything fast, less costly also, because there's a reality behind it. But we're going back to the ancestral technique of woodwork, of upholstery, and the beauty of it. And people more and more understand that it's the way to go forward. The transmission of a savoir-faire behind is so important. And we want to work with them, and they're part of our design as well.
Marion Stora. We'll be back after the break.
The same stories, the same views dominate global news coverage. But The Globalist goes beyond the noise to unpack what's really happening, to find fresh perspectives and considered voices in current affairs, business and much more.
She was doing this all on her own, and I think that she's been a real inspiration to journalists around the world, particularly where there are tough areas of freedom of speech.
I think that one of the mantras that's going to come out of Washington in the Biden administration going forward is unity, but unity with accountability.
The Globalist, live every weekday at 8 a.m. Zurich time, 7 a.m. in London, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Copenhagen-based Spegan & X is an award-winning cross-disciplinary design and architecture studio. It shouldn't be surprising given its three founding partners come from various creative fields, spanning architecture, fashion and scenographic design. Monocle's fashion director, Natalie Theodosi, caught up with two of its co-founders, Nicolene Jerp Carson and Malene Witt, at Monocle's recent pop-up studio at the Copenhagen International Fashion Fair. There, they discuss collaborating with fashion brands, touching on everything from runway shows to retail design. We hear from Nicolene first.
So with the fashion shows, it's a really interesting format because you have to create a momentum, which is only 10 minutes, but that's also the charm of it, that you can really create a unique momentum for everybody that's there. And then, of course, we have to think a lot about sustainability and what materials we use and the afterlife of this big production. But fashion is definitely one of our main clienteers in developing everything from fashion show to retail stores.
Do you think about audience experience differently than when it's an architecture project, when you're developing those shows and also the retail experiences that you work on?
The whole narrative approach to all our projects is a very dominant part of what we are driven by, the explorative part, but definitely in fashion, there's this attention to what's new, what's coming, that we really have had a lot of joy in tapping into when you do a show. There's this momentum. and really a possibility of creating a narrative and an impact and an experience for people. And it's the same in working closely with fashion brands and creating that brand experience in the spatial identity is super interesting for us. We love working with that.
It's interesting you mentioned that fashion shows are 10, 15 minutes max, so there's a real temporal nature to the work. Does that limit you in any way, or do you have to think about materials that you use in a very different way than when you're creating something that's a lot more permanent?
Yes, of course. It's also the magical part, because it is something that it's not built to last forever. Different things are possible, but it also comes with a big awareness that when you use so much effort into something that lasts so short, what is the afterlife? So what experience do you give the people that are there? What afterthoughts do they go home with? But also, what can we do with the materials? So we try to use materials that can then be like the sand show we did for Stine Goyer. So the sand came back out in the nature and was given to other people, so it had this afterlife and nothing was left behind. That's a really important thing to consider.
That's so interesting that you find magic and joy in the temporal nature of those projects rather than find it frustrating that it's so short and it can't last for longer. Tell me, do you have any favorite shows? I have my favorite from shows that I've attended that you've created. The Sand Show with Stine Goyer was one of them. What were some other highlights from your projects over the years?
Temporary projects we've done, like the Future is Present at Design Museum Denmark. I think we really managed to innovate with materials and create an explorative way of visiting those 600 square meters of exhibition space. I love a lot of our hospitality projects because they are very different. If it's for Poppelburger for the Noma family, or the Hart Bakeries, or AOC, which is a Michelin restaurant, those are really different universes. And that's something we put a lot of effort into, developing the projects very differently in relation to what type of client or brand we are working with.
In terms of fashion also, Woodwood is a brand we've worked with for many years. When they decided not to do their own spatial identity, they came to us. And I got this flashback from the first fashion fair we made for them. That was the first project. Picking all the elements ourselves, we were building it all the way through the night. We were installing it ourselves, Nicoline, Sven and I. And this thing about giving birth to a project where you're so physical involved was just such a big joy, and that's where we started, that we wanted to be part of all the processes in the making, because we have this great curiosity in design and in craftsmanship and in materials, that building our projects ourselves is a really important part, because this thing about learning through doing, and that's what goes along with many of our clients, that we have very long relationships. It starts with a small project and it ends up being maybe 5 different retail stores, shopping shops, fairs, events. And that's what is really important for us, where we can keep pushing the boundaries, but we also really have a greater understanding of each other.
When you work with these brands, whether it's a fashion designer or a famous chef, a restaurant, I'm sure you're given detailed briefs because these are brands and companies that have strong identities. How do you make sure you're keeping your clients happy, you're following the briefs, but at the same time you're adding your own creativity and signature to the project?
Most clients, they contact us because they're on a journey where they want to develop, and through that it's part of innovating together and pushing boundaries. Spaken and X is a very diverse language. It's our explorative creative skills that we come with. Our taste develops all the time. There's some values that we really celebrate. We really like when things are raw, when it's honest. But for other clients, it can be more delicate and aesthetic or poetic. We have a language that we practice, but we also trust a lot in ourselves to actually let go and give ourselves a quite big portion of freedom in terms to really develop for that brand and that client. Sometimes we question ourselves that, but then it's funny too when it's met by an audience, if it's our followers or our friends or people from press, they would say this is a Spaken and X project, even though it's a Michelin restaurant or if it's a temporary show. Or big office projects. So I think our language is there always, but it's very diverse and it's very based on the singular journey that we develop for each brand.
And it sounds like you've really worked with some of the most iconic Danish brands across the creative sector. From your perspective, having worked so closely with all these interesting people and creatives, why has there been so much evolution in the past decade and so much international attention in Denmark and especially towards the Danish creative scenes across food, furniture, fashion?
Nome, who we are also working with, of course, is one of the leading pioneers for some of the attention to the values that they cherish around locally sourced food, really caring for each detail, to have this thoughtfulness into everything you bring to the table to create these amazing, unique experiences. And I think that's something that they have definitely set the scene for in the Danish food culture. But I also think that Danish design is something that has been recognized and known since the modernism. And I think it's something that we're also looking back at and to see the generation that we stand on the shoulders of and really see. But we have a design legacy that we want to remember in these times of this fast pace of even fast fashion or even fast interior. That where do we come from?
We get more and more international clients, and we always almost start by asking, why do you contact us? Definitely this mix that I feel that Scandinavians and also Danish designers and architects and innovators in general come with is exactly as you say, Malene. I think this mix of history and quality, craftsmanship, but then also an education system, I would say, that has really, you know, pushed for creativity and for innovation. Our creative educations are really free and quite creative compared to more technical universities in architecture and design. That's really also what Spaken and X, especially the way we mix the different fields of competences and skills from art direction to architecture and design, anthropology. That mix is something quite unique that a lot of our clients call us in to work with, to both innovate and disrupt and think out of the box, but also really knowing what we come from and caring for the quality and the tradition in a way.
You mentioned legacy there, and I think you are building your own legacy. The business is celebrating its 10th anniversary soon. So tell me, what's next? And are your priorities and in your areas of focus as designers the same as 10 years ago? Have they been evolving?
Exploration has been something that has gone across all years for us, that we don't want to fit into a box. We don't want to set a framework or guidelines for what we should be and who we should be. And what has always been really important for us is the people. The people of the team is also shaping who we are. So back to that, we have all these different competences in the house, but that's also shaping us and our projects. And right now we are very much looking into dreaming as a keep on dreaming to see where do we want to be in 10 years from now.
Yeah, and make sure that we never stagnate, that we don't become too commercial, to keep on innovating and to keep the young explorative spirit. In the beginning, we were like, yeah, we can do everything. We mix fields of competences. And then we're like, is it too much? Should we more like specialize in something? And I think we came to the conclusion that no, we really like when we just landed a new client like Itala, Finnish Itala, that does glass and has a lot of heritage, but also wants to into this new, more contemporary journey, and really nice creative director. And that is a project where we really have all our competences in play. We do art direction, we do all our competences are in play. And that's something we were like, this 360 holistic way of working with our clients has really confirmed us that it's right. So we want to do even more of that. Even more Spaken is something that we formulated for the next 10 years. You know, now we kind of know more about what we are, so just even more of that.
That was Malene Witt, and before that, Nicolene Jerp-Carson, founding partners of Spaken and X. They were in conversation with Monocle's fashion director, Natalie Theodosi. Finally on today's program, we talk material innovation. The Good Plastic Company is an international manufacturer of surface materials made from 100% recycled and recyclable plastic. The company works with brands to create modern-looking and environmentally conscious furniture, interior and exterior design elements. The Good Plastic Company's operations director, Victoria Sadova, and CEO, William Chizhovsky, join me in the studio. William began by sharing why this material has, and probably fairly, been given such a bad reputation.
Plastic usually has a negative connotation because plastic is polluting our planet. Plastic sometimes perceived as a cheap material with short usage time and so on. But it is very cheap to produce. It is very durable. It is light and so on. So we do not think that plastic bad itself. We believe that if we use plastic just like as a single plastic and throw it after a very short period of usage to landfill and then it goes to the ocean usually, this is really bad. But if you recycle plastic and give a second life to the plastic, it's beautiful material, it's great workability, it's light. There are a lot of design options as we use it in a design industry.
So it's about the way that we use an employer and looking at the whole life cycle of plastic. The issue seems to be the fact that it reaches a certain point and it just stops and becomes waste. I mean, Victoria, can you tell me a little bit about how things work at the Good Plastic Co. in terms of building circularity into plastic?
There is a big industry which recycle a lot of plastic itself. And from another side, there are businesses who seeking for the solutions for sustainability. And there is a big gap between them, having no options how to implement it. So we are filling this gap with creating the material made from recycled plastic who can be both sustainable and scalable. Architects and designers, they don't want some small solutions. They're working for the big offices. They need some material which could be repeatable, good quality, because sustainability is not only about the recycled aspect, but it's also about the price, good quality, stable color, vision, and the feeling they can create with the material. Usually sustainable materials, they are produced in a very small volume, for example, a couple of sheets. We grow our production capacity to very high levels, able to supply big projects, 300-500 square meters object, which should be solid and look exactly the same. We are able to do this, and it's really a big challenge for sustainable materials.
William, tell me a little bit about the upcycling approach to making your material. Where do you source the raw plastic materials to make new plastic?
The key is to build a robust supply chain. We work with the large recycling factories across the Europe. So our main suppliers are in the Netherlands, in Germany, in France, in Eastern Europe. They collect plastic usually as a post-consumer plastic waste. They separate this plastic by types, they wash it, they shred it, and then they deliver it to us. Our equipment developed by our team, so it's our in-house made equipment. We use this raw material in order to produce panels. As we work with the large recycling factories, we can make it repeatable, we can make it scalable, as Victoria said, because quite often we work to provide global solution. We started 5 years ago. At that time, and still, there are a number of projects, a lot of startups trying to solve the plastic waste problem. There are a lot of small things which produce out of recycled plastic, like sunglasses frames, like bracelets, like some t-shirts. But at the same time, how, like with a simple math, how many plastic you can recycle producing frames for sunglasses, which is 20-30 grams. Our goal was to develop scalable solution where we can really utilize huge volume of plastics, because interior design is huge industry and they consume a lot of materials. To use recycled plastic in a material field, we believe it's really much more valuable as a solution compared to some small-scale projects.
If your company doesn't exist, what's the alternative? What would be happening to this plastic?
Quite often, it is incineration. Those plastics just burn to produce energy. It's called waste to energy, which is not efficient solution, in my opinion. When you burn plastic, it emits a lot of CO2. It emits a lot of other gases, which is very harmful. it's a bad solution. Much better to do such product, which we do, a few more companies also doing the same product. With the product which we produce, it's not only about finding the second life of the plastic waste, but it's also about CO2. We save around 3 tons of CO2 for each ton of production of our material comparing to the virgin plastic production. We are providing alternative not to use virgin plastic, not to create a demand for virgin plastic production, but use plastic which was already produced.
Usually it's designers, when we show them some of the samples, they're choosing what is nicer and getting the feedback from the market, readjusting the collections. With brands, usually we create the patterns with many brands because they want to recreate their own aesthetics. For example, we worked for Nike with creating several concepts, and they are designers choosing what they want to see in the pattern, and we trying to meet the requirement. That is why we stick to one material, so that we have the variety of patterns, but we still remain sustainable.
William, this realization about the importance of using that single type, does that come from, I know your background's not necessarily in design, where does that come from? Is that part of your scientific background, your research background?
It's more because to be certified as a producer of sustainable material, because there are a lot of greenwashing in this area, unfortunately, so people saying it's recycled, it's green, but they have to prove it somehow. For example, in our case, we have cradle-to-cradle certification. Cradle-to-cradle certified our factories, they certified our suppliers. We did a lot of tests in laboratory to prove that it's not harmful, this is recyclable and so on. And that's why if you mix different type of plastic, you make downcycling, and it's requirement for certification to have only single type of plastic.
I mean, so what does cradle to cradle mean for you? Like, how does that look for the good plastic company?
Cradle to cradle is a proof that our plastic is really made out of 100% recycled material, and it is circular. Because this proof is really important, especially for large brands, who's usually our client, so they need to be sure when they communicate that it's true and there is no greenwashing in this. What we are doing is good, but at the same time, we cannot increase our impact without demand for the material. And we are not the final decision makers select this material for their projects. Designer and architects, they are decision makers. Recycling factories, they can recycle even more plastic, but without demand, they do not know what to do with this. The same in our case. So we can produce much more panels and we can do much more impact. But if there is a lack of demand, if architects and designers still continue using old non-sustainable material and they don't want to change anything in their behavior, nothing going to be changed in the future. It's really like complex problem. And like we develop machinery, we develop the process, we develop the recipe. But we really need support of designers and architects to change their behavior and to use sustainable material in their projects. It's important because interior design industry, they're responsible for 8 to 10% of CO2 emission globally. This is like really large impact can be achieved just changing the material.
That was William Chizhovsky and Victoria Sadova of The Good Plastic Company. And that's all for today's show. For more design stories, listen to our 5-minute midweek bonus show, Monocle on Design Extra, which airs on Thursdays. And if you enjoy print, then do pick up a copy of Monocle magazine as well. It's on all good newsstands now. Today's episode was produced and edited by Maylee Evans. I'm Nick Manise, and you can reach me on nm@monocle.com. Thanks for listening.